Thanks, Ryan. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. Want to call us? Want to text us? 312-981-7200.
Top of the morning to you, Bill.
You followed suit. Yesterday,
you did not.
I did not.
2 days ago, we talked about blanketing the town in red because we wanted to show our support and help the Blackhawks win tonight because, Bill, it is a must-win tonight.
Tonight would qualify as a must-win game, yes.
So we're supposed to wear red if you don't have a Blackhawks sweater. I still like to say jersey, but whatever. Just wear red, and I am wearing Michael's Stan Mikita because I can't find my Duncan Keith one.
You wear it well. You look the Stan Mikita
sweater
looks good on you. You look like you could play. Like if the game was being held right now and they needed a defenseman, you look like you're ready.
I think they're ready tonight. They don't need me.
I believe they will win tonight, don't you?
They have to.
Yeah.
But we were supposed to show our support. Of course, Judy Pilak brought in her voodoo doll.
Yes, she did.
The voodoo that you do.
Which she always has on her. Isn't that peculiar?
It is weird.
I don't know anybody else of her stature. I know plenty of people that carry voodoo dolls, but not of the stature of Judy Pilak. And she always has one on her.
But she doesn't do it in a negative. See, if I'm going voodoo, and I do have a voodoo doll, I've never used it for anything, but it's just kind of a decoration in one of our bathrooms. And there's a white pin and a black pin. I didn't know the difference.
Is it in your Cajun-themed bathroom that you have? Yeah.
You get Cajun fries when you're in there as well. And hush puppies.
Delicious.
So Judy used her voodoo doll in a positive way, which I've really not heard of. There's a white pin that means positivity.
Yeah.
She took a lock of hair from each of us.
Yes.
And said, because we're super fans, which I'm so glad I'm considered in the super fan category.
Oh, you're in there. You're in there.
And she said that her hope, her wish, her chant, whatever it was, to win the Stanley Cup. It wasn't just for tonight.
Right. 16 more wins.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling positive. I'm wearing my sweater. You nor Kevin are wearing red today.
I'm embarrassed.
What's up with
Kevin,
that?
Oh, Kevin does have a Blackhawks t-shirt on, the gray one. But that still counts.
The only red shirt I have is it's a cut-off gym shirt, so I figured that wouldn't be appropriate.
Why would that be different than any other day?
I guess that's true. At least I'm covered a little bit.
Now, can I give my lame excuse?
Yeah, you are wearing red.
I have three red t-shirts, and when I put this on in the dark this morning, I thought it was my Blackhawks red t-shirt, and as it turns out, it's not. It's just a neutral red t-shirt. But I have one that has it says Blackhawks on it, and I thought that was it. And then realized later it's not. So I tried. But
that's
our
success.
Eye insurance here isn't that great. So just so everyone understands, we don't have optical.
Although you have a Hawks sweater, which you never wear unless I see you at a game.
I wear it at games.
But today's the day.
I didn't. I feel bad.
I'm happy you at least wore red.
I'm wearing all red and black things.
I'm proud.
I need.
No Blackhawks.
A sketch artist to come in and put the Blackhawks logo on either my shirt or my sweatshirt.
Get Verna Sadock.
All right.
Isn't that her name?
I think it is.
The woman who always did when before cameras were allowed into courtrooms or in certain cases when they don't allow cameras, she would do the sketches.
Right. She was very good.
She wasn't that great.
If she's listening, please come down. I need your help.
Oh, she was good. I mean,
she's really good. Really good. So tonight, let's. Let's hope.
I'm nervous.
If you're prone to prayer, let's pray. Let's keep them in our thoughts, whatever you say in a situation like this. But if you're going to win 16, you have to start tonight with number one, and then at least the next three in a row after that, at least.
I perform better when my back is up against the wall.
Yeah.
Honestly, I really do.
I think they do, too. I think they wish, if they had their wishes on this, that their back wasn't quite up against the wall as tight as it is.
Right.
Nearing the wall is one thing, but it's right on the wall. So please, fellas, win tonight and then win at least three more in a row and we'll take it from there.
Then we'll regroup.
Yeah, we'll
have cookies and milk and regroup.
Put a big crooked number up there. Make it an 8-0 score and then everything will be right again in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Or 1-0. I don't care. Just win.
Just a win. I don't care by how many goals. A win is a win.
That's what I would counsel them. I would pull them all in my office and I'd say, fellas, this is our mathematical goal. Let's try to score a higher number than they do. And then I would just let them think about that for a little while. Oh, yeah.
Don't make them think.
Like if they score two, let's go for three or above.
I'd still prefer 10 goals in the first period.
Right, just to set a pace.
That would be nice,
All right, that is totally unrealistic and not going to happen.
Do this, guys.
But if you do that, you're making a statement, Wendy. You're saying we came to play. 10 goals in the first period? We mean business.
Not going to happen.
On the other team's goal, not on our goal, too.
Right.
Make no all, own goals. We don't
please
need that.
Make all the goals into their Pecorini net.
He's a Pekka.
Right.
I have to pause for a yes. little bit and then and let it head.
Think. Right.
That's what he is?
Do you think in Nashville there are a lot of baby boys being born named Pekka?
No.
I don't think so either. I would be shocked to find that to be true. I'm going to spend the afternoon calling hospitals in the region and say, how many young boys have you had named Pekka in the last 72 hours?
And they're going to go, Chicago fan, and hang up
right.
on you.
Right.
Are they still not letting Chicago fans in? Remember, Nashville went through this thing that if you bought yeah. tickets and you didn't have like a local zip code on your mm-hmm. credit card, they wouldn't let you buy a ticket. That stinks.
I have not seen or heard much Blackhawk presence there.
It's a thing again this year.
It is?
Yeah. It's local, like local addresses can buy only.
That's so not
I know.
Fair. Right. I have seen people on Facebook that have somehow gotten tickets and yeah. they're there and they will represent.
Yeah.
Because we cannot make the trip.
Right.
Oh, come on,
but
Hawks.
I'm with you,
I can't. I got Ajita again.
I'm nervous because I have not heard Dave Ennett say his patented "We got this."
That's the most disturbing thing. When Dave says those words, and he has in the past, whenever Dave Ennett says "We got this," we all just breathe a sigh of relief. Like, well, Dave said it, so let it be written, so let it be done.
Dave, like the rest of us, a little scared.
He seemed, he did.
A little scared.
He did.
And I heard him say, you know, Dave, if you're available, I heard you say you're not going to guarantee this. Because it can't be guaranteed. We're just hoping against hope
yes.
that they can
yes.
win tonight.
Yes, because you have Ajita, and that is the left winger for the Nashville Predators.
Pekka's cousin.
Pekka's cousin Ajita, who scored a goal and has an assist in the series. He's been good.
All right, well, Dave did not give us a we got this. I'm
no,
okay.
It's
I hard to do
he's
it.
He's so nervous.
But you have to mean it. If you can't just say it for the sake of saying it. You got to mean it.
All right, look, it's worked before, right?
Yes.
What's the worst thing that could happen? It doesn't work.
Right.
You could lose a lot of credibility.
Yeah, there is that.
Listen, Dave, I love you, and I believe everything you say in the world of sports, but I don't give you that much power to make this happen. So just say it. And if it does, then you look good. If it doesn't, we all go, oh, he tried. He was positive.
Or everybody just forgets.
Right.
That would be even better.
Some of us will never forget.
Thanks, Ryan.
Could you just say it for tonight? Not even
it.
A full commitment
yes.
to the...
Yeah, I will.
All right.
I will.
All right.
Wendy?
Yes, Dave?
We got this.
Oh! See,
didn't that sound nice?
It's very reassuring.
Warms the cockles of our hearts. That's what
I
it
don't
does,
have a
Dave.
Cockle.
I'd like to
I'm
question what we got now.
Yep.
Well,
do we have this game? Do we have the series?
Let's just leave it at we got
game
we
by
got
game.
This.
Let's yeah. just take it inch by inch, step by step.
That's the way to play it. That is absolutely the way to play it.
Dave, I love you.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
We're feeling a little better already.
Good. I'm glad I could help.
Yep. Yep.
That's what he does.
Yep. If you're wrong, by the way, neither Wendy nor I will ever speak to you again. But it sounded so good when you said it.
Understood.
All right. All right. We must take a break.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. We'll take a quick break. We've got a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. We're trying our best to help the Blackhawks, who have been very, very good the last decade or so, Wendy. I don't know if you saw in the paper. They've won three Stanley Cup championships. We're hoping they win a fourth this year, but they're slightly down. But talk about a positive attitude. Jack?
Yay. How are you guys doing? Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
Love you right back.
Oh, how nice. I'm a little depressed about this whole situation, but... You know, after listening to what you guys were saying, I started thinking back, pondering how good this team is and what they've done. You know what? We were down 3-1 when we were playing Detroit, mm-hmm. and we knocked them off the map. Now we're down 3-0. We got them right where we want them.
Yes. Yes. Insert demonic
right.
laugh here.
<You're> right. That laugh is going to...
We'll be fine.
But... Yeah, you're right. They need to score anywhere from 3 to 5 goals every game and not give up more than 1 and 2. So,
well, and Corey Crawford is doing his best.
He's Sucks.
No way. Jack, come on. He needs some defensive players that need to step up their game a little bit, too. It can't all fall on Corey Crawford. I know he let a lot of goals through. One was fluky.
Some of the goals that have been getting through, I'm like, come on. They had to put that kid in from Christmas Story with the dark glasses and the cane. Crawford, you know, I'll tell you what, that guy can stand on his head and nothing gets by. Then all of a sudden, the other Crawford shows up. I'm like, come on.
What, like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Yeah. Oh.
We'll see what happens, Jack. Watch tonight. We'll be all right.
You know what? This team ain't gonna, they're not gonna roll over and die. They're gonna come out like the Blackhawks. So
that's all they can do.
That's the positivity we needed. Thank you, Jack.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Bye.
Take care, bye.
Jack's a little bit of a flip flopper. He did positivity, then some hateful, hurtful stuff.
I know. He did, didn't he?
Then back to positive. That's how we're feeling though.
It's not impossible to come back from an 0-3 deficit. It's not impossible. It's improbable, but not impossible. This team has done amazing things in the past. It wouldn't shock me to see them win four in a row. They certainly have it in them. They had Nashville's number for most of the season.
Nashville's really playing
tight.
They're
playing well. They are playing well.
Can I tell you what I woke up to this morning?
Yeah.
I heard some loud noise in the backyard, and it woke me up before my alarm, a little before 6:30. I went outside to investigate, and there were helicopters all over the place. There was one, and then I looked and saw another one, and I looked and saw another one. So three helicopters making a triangular formation.
How close to you?
At one point, it was right over our house.
Yeah.
And that frightened me a little bit. I did pay my income tax. I owe some. That's the first thing I was yelling out. It was right over our house. Even the dog was looking up, and usually Tiki doesn't notice anything, but it was loud and right above our house. And then I started thinking, it's time to make the gravy.
I know they're filming a sequel to Apocalypse Now in your neighborhood. You got that memo, right?
I did not get that memo.
Yeah, they were filming that.
But I kept thinking of Ray Liotta making the gravy, making the sauce in Goodfellas, and this song is playing. And I heard this in my head this morning. So my first thought was, you know, a crime has been committed and they're looking for someone. Then I'm starting to think maybe someone escaped from a prison. And then I thought, I live in LaGrange. There's really no prison close by.
There's no LaGrange prison.
And then there was this train accident in Western Springs, Western Springs, technically in LaGrange. And the whole town was just completely backed up. There were gates that were not coming up because some pedestrian did get hit by the train around 6:20-ish this morning. Ryan would have more details on that. Burlington Northern Santa Fe line was stopped. No inbound or outbound for a while. So you look at this mob of commuters that are maybe walking down a stop further so they can get on the train.
Yeah.
Gates were down. Kids were late for school. It was really mayhem.
And it's one of those things that when it happens, you feel guilty for wanting, you go, oh, this is going to mess up my day. And then you think, yeah, but somebody got hit by a train. So you can't make it personal and go, this is really inconveniencing me. Because you think about somebody who, they lost their life,
I know. That's my understanding of fatality.
Oh, no.
And then I have an eighth grader who we're trying to get across the tracks to get him to school. And Dylan says, do you think it was an accident?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know. Either way, it's bad. He goes, isn't it hard to get hit by a train? I said, yes. So sometimes when people do get hit by a train, it's intentional.
Sure, sometimes. But
it's hard. We grew up, my grandma's backyard was right by the train tracks. And yeah, we'd go put a penny on the tracks and you'd hear the old tales about, you're going to derail it.
Yeah.
No, you just want to flatten the penny. And I was afraid of trains. There's a yellow line. If you're walking near a station, I was told you'll get sucked under the train. Don't go past that line.
Right.
I look both ways. I know there are people rushing to get a train sometimes, and the gates are down, and there's a stop train, and they're looking both ways to try and run to get to the other side to catch their train.
Right.
And they can get hit that way because they don't see it coming. But it's hard to get hit by a train. You should be afraid of them.
My mom, when I was I must have been 4 or 5 years old, one of my mom's aunts who took the train downtown every day for work, she had a purse, and as the train went by, it hooked the purse, and it dragged her like 50 or 60 yards. Yeah.
And a lot of times women have that purse so tightly over their shoulder that
she couldn't let it go.
You can't
let
go.
It was hooked onto her shoulder.
Plus, the train's pulling you so quickly, it's not like it's loose enough to get it off you.
Right. Yeah, it was.
Oh,
it was pulling into the station.
Was she okay?
She had, you know, all kinds of physical therapy afterwards because it, like I said, it dragged her like 50 or 60 yards. The train had actually been coming to a stop. It was coming into the station when it snagged her.
Oh, my. So at least it wasn't going.
It wasn't going full speed.
But still.
That would have killed her, I think. I'm almost positive. But I'm always so careful now if I'm near one, not just that yellow line, but I stay way far back.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I am definitely afraid of trains. And, I'm so sorry that this happened.
Yeah,
I feel
awful
for the family,
yeah,
and I feel for the people who are just trying to get to work and they witness this. This is something I don't know
sure
that you can forget about.
Yeah, terrible.
So Burlington, Northern Santa Fe, Ryan, I don't know if you're listening now, but things are getting back to normal. There
good
was a three-hour delay.
Hmm. All right, we will talk about many things on today's show, and if you want to jump in at any point, you can at 312-981-7200. News is next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. 312-981-7200. If you want to talk to us, you can call that number. You can text that number. There's a couple of celebrity breakups in the news that are worthy of some discussion. Now, I always feel bad for obvious reasons whenever a couple has been together for a while and they split up because, you know, someone's getting hurt. Maybe it's him, maybe it's her, maybe it's both, maybe it's the kids. But nobody
someone
goes into a union
yeah
thinking, we'll give this a couple of years, and if it works, fine, and if not, fine. It's always ugly. One of the ones is Carmelo Anthony, and the reason I bring it up is this. Carmelo Anthony is a basketball player. He plays for the New York Knicks. Over the last couple of years, there have been rumors every couple months that Carmelo Anthony may become a Chicago Bull. It has not happened yet. Might happen at some point in the future.
Is he good?
Yeah. He's
a lot
good
of all-stars, a bunch of, he's got at least two gold medals, right?
But he's
for
a
Team
bit
USA
of a, would you say he's a bit of a head case?
He's a shooter, that's for sure. When he gets the ball, he shoots it.
Yeah. He's not your typical, you know, you want guys that are what they call team players that, you know, share a little better. If he gets the ball, he shoots the ball. That's what happens. And sometimes he makes it and sometimes he doesn't.
So it's not like he's nailing it every time.
No one's shooting 100%, but, you know. But now the reason he's getting a divorce, and according to several different stories, they say that he and his wife were already kind of on the outs. But now he has gotten a dancer pregnant. And I was shocked to learn, Wendy, that the dancer that they're talking about works in a gentleman's club. I just assumed naturally it was a ballet dancer, but it's not. It's somebody who works in a gentleman's club. But the reason I bring this to you is I'd known that Carmelo Anthony was married, but I was not that aware of his wife or her name. And her name is Lala.
Movie of the year.
La La Land.
Oh, wait, no, it wasn't. I'm sorry.
All right. Just
it was for 30 seconds, it was.
She's not a celebrity because a lot of times the basketball players are married to models or celebrities.
She
of
looks
some sort
like a model. She's really pretty, Lala Anthony is. And her maiden name is Palooza. I should have put that together. I don't know why I didn't even think about that until just now. But Carmelo Anthony was messing around with a woman who now claims that she's pregnant with his baby. And as you can imagine, the story says, Lala is upset. Multiple sources tell us the other woman works at a gentleman's club in New York City.
Wonder what her name is.
Right.
If you got Lala as your wife.
If the old ball and chain's name is Lala.
And is not a dancer, what's right the dancer's name?
Margaret. Doesn't that make all kinds of sense?
Lala was in the movie Chirac, by the way.
Was she in that?
Yeah.
Oh, so she is an actress.
She's an actress. She was a VJ, an MTV VJ on TRL.
Oh,
remember
that
show,
that
Total Request Live?
Yeah.
She's also written a book, apparently a businesswoman, producer, and actress as well. So,
Ryan, do we know, was her name at birth Lala? Or did she change her name to Lala?
Alani.
Like Wendy has threatened to do many times.
Alani. So is she
Hawaiian? A-L-A-N-I. Alani Vasquez.
Alani Vasquez. But Lala Anthony and
Lala.
Lala.
You got to say it like that. Oh, she is beautiful.
She's very pretty. You know what she has is beautiful eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't she? Very nice eyes. So they are
would
splitting up.
Would you say
up
ooh la la?
Ooh la la. Sassoon. So they are splitting up.
Wow.
And
it's
so
2017, by the way.
So is Alex Jones. Do you know who Alex Jones is?
Uh-uh.
Alex Jones is a media guy, does some radio, does some television. He is the star of InfoWars, and he's always angry. There's never a time ever that Alex Jones isn't angry. Can we play a little tape of him? Now, you may have seen clips of this guy or heard clips of this guy in the past. He, like, the word rant was invented for him because no matter what happens, good or bad, he's angry about it and he yells at you about it. Listen to just a little clip of him.
We have scored a direct stab in those sons of hearts. We got to keep running the knife in, though, folks. We got to keep running it in there. Not worry what they're doing, Dutch. You wanted to fight? You're getting it.
Now that,
you wanted to overrun us and poison us and take our families and kill us? You will die, not us.
Sounds like very much WWF, doesn't it?
I think that Coach Q is going to give that same speech today.
Wendy, I'm not one to give career advice, but I think that you would go a lot farther in your radio career if you copped the attitude that Alex Jones has copped. Just
some people hear my voice like that anyway.
Maybe.
He's only 43 years old.
Yeah.
He's aging so quickly because of all that tension inside
of
him.
He's got a lot of anger inside. You couldn't tell from that clip because that was his birthday show where they had just given him birthday cake and gave him gifts. So he was in a good mood. But he's always in a bad mood. But now the reason I tell you about Alex Jones is he and his wife, Lala Jones, are breaking up. And they're in a custody battle right now, and that's not pleasant for anybody. Nobody wants to be in a custody battle. His wife, to show that he's an unstable individual, is just showing clips in the courtroom of things like you just heard. You know, her argument is, this guy's not a good parent. Listen to this. Watch this. Listen to this. Watch this. And there's countless hours of him doing what you just heard. Even though he claims, he goes, well, that's just a character that I play on a show, InfoWars. I'm not like that. So they asked him questions about his kids, like how old are your kids and what school do they go to and what grades are they in? And he didn't know those answers.
What?
But there's a reason that he says he didn't know the answer.
Let's hear this.
He says he couldn't remember those things because he had just had a large pot of chili.
I don't like him.
That was his reason. Alex Jones of InfoWars is in a custody battle for his children, and his ex-wife, who alleges that Jones is an unfit parent, partly due to his anger conspiracy theory rants. Where's the next part? Oh, here it is. Alex Jones's lawyer is using the defense that Jones is a performance artist, while his wife's legal counsel is making the case that his InfoWars persona is part of his everyday life and he is unsuitable for the kids. Pat Gray mentioned that Alex Jones reportedly didn't know what grades his children were in. On your worst day, you know that, right? On a day, even on a day where you're kind of forgetful, if somebody goes really quick, what grade are your kids in? You know, that's just on your head, isn't it? You just know that.
I could see where you would forget their pants size or what size shirt they wear,
right,
but not what grade they are or their birthdays.
Jones gave the explanation, here it is, that he had eaten a large bowl of chili for lunch.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, she called him on it. I'm not familiar with the association between memory and chili. And then his lawyer said, wait, you've never had hot chili and then just stopped talking.
Good lawyer, by the way.
And then Pat Gray said, and just what, forgotten my children? No.
The
old chili defense. We've seen that 1,000 times. I can't remember. I just had chili. Who could remember anything after having a bowl of chili? It's impossible.
Who's his attorney? Because he obviously said, that's your defense. That's what you got to say.
Somebody whose last name is Jeffy, J-E-F-F-Y. Not the littlest kid from Family Circus. I don't think. Oh, no, it is. It's the littlest kid from Family Circus. I stand corrected. That's his attorney.
And this is the guy who said, like, the Sandy Hook shooting was part of a government conspiracy thing.
He is, like, the number one conspiracy theorist anywhere. Like, no matter what happens, he's sure that the government is behind it and knows more than we're allowed to know. And then he goes on and he screams about it, makes other people angry.
I'm so glad I didn't know who he was. I don't need any of that in my life.
I used to know who he was, and then I had a bowl of chili, and I forgot who he was. Because that's what it does to you. It makes you forget. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Hi. Are you surprised that Fox cut ties with Bill O'Reilly?
Can I tell you something about this?
Huh.
I am surprised.
How come?
Because I just thought that they would brush it under the rug. He's saying this is not factual. None of this is true. I'm happy they did.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of surprised they did. He made them a lot of money.
Oh, he did make them a lot of money. But now, like another woman came forth yesterday
yep.
saying that there had been problems in the past.
And she did not file anything, so there was no... not talking. She could say whatever she wanted.
She said she's not looking for any money. She's not doing this. She's not in this for cash. She just wants it to be known what went on over there. They're coming off of the Roger Ailes thing a year ago, and now Bill O'Reilly. That's a strange culture to work under.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, do you know where he was yesterday?
Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah. Do you know who he was with?
Donald Trump?
No.
That was a good guess, though.
That was an excellent guess. Do you know the answer to this, Ryan?
I do.
Bill O'Reilly was at the Vatican with the Pope yesterday during all this. Actually, just prior to all of this, a couple
asking
hours
for
prior.
Forgiveness.
Well,
what's the Pope doing
asking,
talking to him?
This is what the reason I bring it up is this. I don't know if somebody briefs the Pope in a situation like this. You know, the Pope has a million responsibilities, so I don't know if the Pope has a guy who says to him, here's who this is, here's who this is, or who here's who you're about to meet. Because if you're the Pope and you're briefed on Bill O'Reilly, do you go, the timing's not really good for me to have a photo op with Bill O'Reilly. Let's hold him out for a little bit.
I don't think that's the way the Pope thinks.
I don't think
the
it does
Pope
either.
Wants to
meet
help
everyone. Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
So he thinks, oh, my child has gone astray. I can talk some sense into him.
I don't know that I would be shocked if any of this came up in their brief discussion. Do you think, Ryan? I don't know if they talked about this.
I don't know. I really don't
I
know.
Bet it did.
You think?
If you're accused of a bunch of things and you're saying it didn't happen and
yeah.
all of a sudden the Pope's there, wouldn't you go, you're going to hear some things.
I've had a rough go lately. Here's
I got to tell you, it's
side.
Not true.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did. And the Pope was like, what? I can't hear you.
Maybe. But it just seemed strange with all the news that was going on about him yesterday. The first few pictures I saw of Bill O'Reilly, because I'm like, is Bill O'Reilly? He's not at Fox right now, right? He's elsewhere, right? And then I found out he's not just elsewhere. He's at Vatican City with the Pope.
He was on vacation in Italy and was informed that he was going to be parting ways.
Yeah, which he said was unfortunate. And for him, it is unfortunate, but there's other women that also have a story that was extremely unfortunate that dealt with him.
Absolutely. So. And he's going to do okay. I know he was just signed to a new contract, and it's reported that his exit, he's still going to get tens of millions of dollars. But here's my question I'd like to throw out there.
Yeah.
Who hires him after this?
There's a couple different websites that ponder that very question today, saying that there was a time where something like this, you go, well, that's a career ender. What this guy has done, he's not going to work again, but there's a very good chance he will work again. The one that seems to keep coming to mind is that he could build up some sort of radio network, much like Rush Limbaugh has.
That's what he should do.
That's more than likely what he will
because
do.
Because if Fox isn't going to keep him,
right.
I don't know who else is going to take him. Plus, he lost, you know, how many dozens of advertisers.
Right.
So all of a sudden, he's not as desirable for someone to hire him.
True. But this is one of the stranger aspects to the story. Normally, when somebody's going through what Bill O'Reilly's going through right now, the defense that everybody keeps coming to is, he's just being accused. Nobody has proved anything. He's just being accused. I'm not hearing a whole lot of that this time around. Are you?
Well, he's saying these are false
allegations.
Yeah.
Right.
That's all I've heard it from. But, yeah. You know, it was weird when all these women were coming forward with Bill Cosby as
yeah.
well. Because at first you're like, oh, they're just glomming on. They're just trying to get involved in this. And then after a while you're like, these poor women, that big jerk.
Yes. But and this is a strange part of that. With Bill Cosby, everybody just seemed out and out shocked. Every time an allegation would come out, people go, well, that not Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby wouldn't do something like that. With Bill O'Reilly, you just see people go, oh, yeah, all right. Nobody seems shocked by it. Just the way he carried himself, the way he presented himself, you go, ugh, kind of a slimy guy.
Playing devil's advocate here, coming from his visit with the Pope,
yes.
if I may.
Yes.
If all these advertisers did not pull out, do you think Fox would have still fired him?
No.
I don't either.
I don't think
That's why I'm a little surprised, but, you know, money talks.
Right.
So if all of a sudden, you know, all your big advertisers are gone and you're having these little, tiny little commercials for little tiny things, where is he hireable?
I think if you're Fox, the public perception of him, if you go back just a couple of short weeks ago, the public perception of him was waning, and I'm sure that that's upsetting to Fox, you know, but I'm sure the big cornerstone for them was
advertisers.
Multiple advertisers, big names, lots of money, just saying, we're not backing this guy anymore. And, you know, there have been other people who have done horrible things where the advertisers pull out for a little bit. Remember Don Imus went through this at least once and maybe more than once?
That was the Rutgers thing, right?
Yeah, that was Rutgers. Yeah. So big advertisers were pulling out, but then a couple of weeks later, they were like reexamining it, going, okay, he did his penance. We gave him a month. We didn't advertise for a month or 6 weeks. We're back in. So sometimes they have a short memory.
And there have been people who have rebuilt their careers, too. Look at Marv Alberts.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You remember that in the late 90s? All those sexual assault allegations.
Yeah, that's right.
It was the trial, right? I mean, they were actual criminal allegations, and he's doing NBA games again. I mean,
from downtown.
Bill Clinton, another example, right? I mean, a guy who just, you know what? I'm going to continue to stay in the spotlight, and we'll see where this goes.
But the ratings were up since this was announced about his.
Bill O'Reilly.
Yes, and to me, I'm just thinking people, you're going to have your diehard fans who are going to watch regardless.
Right.
But you also are having people going, what is he going to say about this?
Right.
So again, you think Fox goes, oh my God, the ratings are up. But the key is those advertisers. I bet United Airlines could get a good rate.
Right. I'm sure they could.
Advertise on him.
The most ironic thing is he did this thing, the no spin zone, which was all spin. So does he understand the irony in that himself? He must, right?
He knows.
It's the funniest thing in the world to bill something as the no spin zone, and it's 100% spin. It's not even a little bit spin or half spin. It's all spin.
And did he pretty much, can you honestly say he single-handedly kind of put Fox on the map?
No, not single-handedly. But he was a major factor in it, sure. A major factor in it.
Hence the name, the O'Reilly factor.
Right.
There you go. Right. It's right there.
Right. But, I mean, if you look at their castle, so many of their biggest rooks are gone. Megyn Kelly's gone. He's gone. And I guess, did they name, is it Tucker Carlson that's replacing him, right?
Correct.
Do we know?
A lot of bow ties. Get him ready.
No, he doesn't wear them anymore.
Oh, he doesn't?
No, some fashion consultant assured him that that was not in his best interest.
Hmm.
So he's
kind of
no
his
longer,
identity, though,
it
right?
Was
it's
for
like
a
Mr. T with the gold chains.
Right. No, they switched. Now, Mr. T is wearing bow ties, and Tucker Carlson is wearing gold chains and a mohawk. I don't understand these
shows. And a feather earring,
yeah,
right?
I don't get it. All right, we must take a break. We'll get some news. Ryan has the news, and then there's more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill, I don't know if you remember, we had an election recently.
I remember bits and pieces, sure.
Do you remember prior to the election, no one thought our current president was going to win?
Right.
I mean, there were people, but for the most part, people thought Hillary Clinton was going to walk away with
us. All the experts thought it would be Hillary Clinton. All the polls said it would be Hillary Clinton. But one man said the opposite.
Well, our next guest has correctly predicted every single solitary presidential election, the winner of the election since 1982. And Alan Lichtman is on the phone with us right now. And, sir, we remember talking to you, and you said President Donald Trump will be President Donald Trump. You were correct again.
Indeed. And I was correct because I didn't listen to the conventional wisdom. I didn't follow the polls.
Why not?
I didn't look at. Because polls are snapshots. They're not predictors. They are abused and misused as predictors. And all of those polls had to figure out also who was going to be a likely voter. And there was no clear way to make that kind of determination. So when they tell you the error in the polls is plus and minus 3%, that presumes everything else about the poll is correct, including their likely voter screen.
Alan,
so the real era is much larger.
I know that a magician never reveals his secrets, but you're obviously doing something right to have predicted every presidential race since 1982. So I know you just gave us a little bit of an outline, but you're seeing something that no one else is seeing. So what is it that you're seeing?
Yeah, my system is called the Keys to the White House. It's a formal mathematical model, and it is unique in that it pays no attention to polls, pundits, or even the events of the campaigns, or even much attention to the candidates itself. Rather, the theory behind the polls, behind my keys, that I developed by studying every American election from 1860 to 1980, is that American presidential elections are primarily referenda on whether or not the party holding the White House should get four more years. And my 13 keys to the White House looks at the strength and performance of the party holding the White House. And irrespective of the Trump candidacy, I was able to discern many vulnerabilities of the incumbent Democrats. They took a pasting in the midterm elections. They had these pesky third-party candidates running way over their heads. They were defending an open seat. They had a contentious nomination struggle. The Obama administration didn't follow up the Affordable Care Act with a comparable domestic achievement in the second term, given Republican opposition. They didn't follow up the dispatch of bin Laden with a comparable foreign policy triumph in the second term. So I kept my eye on the big picture, and that is the magician's secret.
Alan, does this play a role in it? Because all the experts that I've seen the past couple months all say the same thing, that Hillary Clinton ignored states or didn't pay the proper respect or time in the states that she just assumed would naturally go her way, and they didn't. Do you think that was a factor or not?
No, I think that's a lot of nonsense. So there's no evidence that campaign appearances in states have significant effects on the outcome. I predicted the results in September long before these events had unfolded, so I couldn't have had my prediction turn on anything like that. And by the way, she visited Pennsylvania, a pretty reliable Democratic state, in presidential elections many times and still didn't win Pennsylvania.
How do polls work necessarily? Doesn't somebody just call and say, who are you voting for? And can't people lie in the polls?
There's so many problems with polls. A, people can lie. B, you can get your likely voter screen wrong. C, people can hang up and not answer your questions, and that could influence the sample. And there are still issues with contacting people on cell phones. Even old dinosaurs like me operate on cell phones nowadays. I don't even have a landline.
Yeah, I don't know why I hang on to mine. Bill, you have too, but
yeah, you still have it just in case.
We have a bunch of people texting, and I it could be my mistake, but on your press sheet for the new book, which we will talk about in just a second, it says that you have predicted every presidential election, the winner of every election since 1982, and a bunch of people are texting us saying there was no presidential election in 1982.
84, yeah. Then, right?
84. It should say 84.
Yeah. Was this, of all those elections, Alan, was this the easiest or the hardest or somewhere in the middle to predict?
Oh, this was far and away the hardest election to predict for several reasons. Number one, you had in Donald Trump an absolute precedent-breaking candidacy, right? You had commentators saying virtually every day Trump is doing things that would have driven any other candidate out of the race. You know, for example, the Access Hollywood tape found a presidential candidate bragging about sexually assaulting women, and some one dozen women accused him of sexual assault, harassment, and voyeurism. Surely that might have been enough to drive any normal candidate out of the race. His racist comments about a federal judge, we can go on and on. His claiming he wouldn't necessarily accept the results of the election. That made it very, very difficult. And there were a lot of close calls on the keys as well, such as, do you count the contest between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders as a real contest? Because she won it pretty handily. But it certainly was a very contentious nomination struggle. So this is a very hard call. Normally, I make my calls much earlier. I called the very difficult-to-call 2012 election with very late. You know, Romney was even or ahead in the polls. I called that in 2010. I called the 2008 election in 2005. In fact, I became notorious for saying things are so bad for the Bush administration that the Democrats could pick a name out of the phone book and elect that person president. And that's kind of what they did, right? Who had heard of Barack Obama back in 2005?
Right, sure. And then, Alan, when you did go out on that limb and say your prediction that it would be Donald Trump as our next president, I remember everybody going, "Well, boy, Alan Lichtman is nuts. He's crazy. What is he thinking?" Was that a difficult couple of weeks for you, or how did you survive through that?
It was a difficult few months for me because I made the prediction in September, and then I doubled down on it in October. Look, I teach at American University in Washington, D.C., not exactly a hotbed of Trump support, is it?
No.
And, you know, people would say, you know, where are you going to get, where'd you get your degree from, Professor Lichtman? Mail order? You know, is American University going to get rid of you when you're proven to be wrong? Of course, I have something nice called tenure, but I wasn't wrong. But I took a lot of flack, as you can imagine. And people don't understand. These are predictions.
Right.
They're not endorsements.
Exactly. In fact, when we spoke to you, when all the presses came out that you have been right since 1984 and you've predicted Donald Trump winning, I remember you saying, reluctantly, I am telling you that Donald Trump will be our next president.
That's right. I certainly have not endorsed, did not endorse him. And I've picked over time an equal number of, about an equal number of Republican and Democratic wins. And of course, whenever I pick a Republican win, the Democrats think I'm a big traitor. Whenever I pick a Democratic win, the Republicans say I'm nothing more than a Democratic tool. So what I've managed to do over the years is get everyone in America mad at me.
Congratulations. That must feel wonderful. Alan Lichtman is our guest. His new book is called The Case for Impeachment. It was just released. Great book. We'll come back and talk to him about that next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Alan Lichtman is our guest. His book is called The Case for Impeachment, just released. So I know you predicted that Donald Trump would be the president, Alan, and I guess this is the most obvious question in the world, but do you predict that he will also be impeached, or will he remain in office for the 4 years?
No, I predicted that he would be impeached, or at least would not serve his 4 years. He could take the Nixon route out and if confronted with impeachment and possible conviction and resign. And I first made that prediction in September 2016 at the very time that I predicted Donald Trump would win the presidency. And by the way, Donald Trump was very gracious. He sent me a personal note, which I have here framed. It says, congrats, Professor, good call. I don't think he paid attention to the rest of my commentary, though. You know, he doesn't need a whole lot, apparently. But I wrote this book because I do believe that Americans should be worried about our constitutional order, our liberties, our freedoms, and now our national security under a Trump presidency. And I wrote this book as a guide to the American people, going through the history of impeachments, the process of impeachments, Trump's own personal history that going into the presidency made him uniquely vulnerable to impeachment, and then the events of the first 2 months of his presidency, which seemed to bear out my predictions. And this is addressed to the American people. It's not a partisan book. I don't quote a single Democrat. I don't make my argument based on his political opponents. I don't say he should be impeached if you don't like his policies or you don't like his style. I'm talking about serious transgressions that threaten our country. And it's addressed to the people because ultimately impeachment rests in the hands of the American people. It won't happen unless the people demand it.
The book is called The Case for Impeachment. You can get it on Amazon. It's available. You've also written The Keys to the White House. Alan Lichtman, professor of history, on the line with us at American University. Don't want to give away all your secrets, but give us some of the reasons why he could and you think will be impeached.
Yeah, I lay out 8 specific grounds for impeachment. Each one is a chapter of my book, The Case for Impeachment, and obviously you need to read the book to get the full analysis. Let me just highlight 2 or 3 points, if I may. First of all, I say in the book, there is a Russian sword of Damocles hanging over this administration. There are now 3 investigations going on about possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia's reprehensible and serious attack on our democracy, and possibly, heaven forbid, even collusion involving the president. We don't know what the results of those investigations are going to be, but they could lead to charges of what I call misprision of treason. That is, if Trump knew members of his team were colluding and didn't report it, that's a serious federal crime. And again, of course, if you know it turns out he had any involvement whatsoever personally, that could lead to the first charge of treason ever leveled against an American president. And that's a specific ground for impeachment under the Constitution. And what troubles me so much is that the administration's response to this whole issue of the Russia connection has all the hallmarks of a Nixonian type of cover-up. And in the book, I point out the many parallels between Donald Trump and Richard Nixon. But look what's gone on. People like Jared Kushner and General Flynn and others have kind of denied contacts with Russia, Russian agents. And, you know, then when it turns out they have had contacts, or, you know, they've deflected, they've deceived, and ultimately tried to claim, well, it was all innocuous anyway. It didn't amount to anything. It's what many have claimed, including Jeff Sessions, now Attorney General. And that sounds to me a lot like what the Nixon administration said. Oh, Watergate was nothing more than a third-rate burglar. Second area is conflicts of interest. I said in the book that if I have a chapter in the book directed to Donald Trump saying how he can avoid impeachment, and one way is to divest all his business interests. He didn't do that. Sure, if he had divested, he would have taken a financial hit, but he still would have been a billionaire, and nobody forced him to run for president. And he has far-flung business interests across the world. We don't know exactly what they are because he's never released his taxes.
He's being audited, Alan. He can't release them. He's being audited. He's explained that to us many times.
Every president has their taxes audited every year.
I know.
And they still release their taxes.
I know.
There's nothing stopping you from releasing taxes under audit. Plus, I'm sure he's got loads of years of taxes that aren't under audit. Because the audit has passed. Audits don't last forever.
Mm-hmm.
They're not perennial, you know. So he's got all these business interests. We don't know exactly what they are. And there's something called the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. It's kind of an old-fashioned term, but basically it means if you're president, you can't take anything of value from a foreign government, their agents, or foreign-owned banks or corporations controlled by the government. And it's an absolute prohibition. Doesn't require a quid pro quo. It doesn't specify the amount of the emolument. And we know there are enormous potentials for conflicts. He just received, for example, numerous potentially lucrative trademarks from China.
Yep.
Right.
That was at a time where he seemed to be moving away from astute China policy. He's got trademarks there that have to be renewed.
These are for Ivanka's businesses as well, right? For her clothing lines?
He's got trademarks too, exactly. Yeah. I'm talking about the president himself.
Yeah.
And the envoy to the U.S. from the Philippines, guess what, is head of Trump Tower Manila, where Trump has a financial interest.
A slight conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Right.
And, and the problem is, you know, people like you and me, we shouldn't have to guess where the national interest leaves off and Trump's private pocketbook interests kick in. And he's got all kinds of interests, of course, financially here in the United States, which
sure.
could be affected by all kinds of Trump decisions on taxes, regulations, labor, trade. The potential for conflicts is inevitable. And the remedy for that is impeachment. And let me give you my edgiest one.
All right, we only have like 30 seconds here, so go with the edgy.
What's the edgiest?
A crime against humanity for turning back the clock on our efforts to fight climate change.
Yeah.
The International Criminal Court has just prioritized crimes against the environment as an area of prosecution. And in 2009, Trump and others sent a letter to President Obama saying the scientific evidence is irrefutable. Unless we take strong action on climate change, we are going to face catastrophic consequences. That's 8 years ago, and things have only gotten worse.
Alan Lichtman has a gift for prognostication. I've never had a guest on the show. Wendy and I never have that I've wanted to go to Las Vegas more than Alan Lichtman. No way. His new book is called...
You pay my way, I'll go.
All right. It's worth it. The new book is called The Case for Impeachment. It's available everywhere. It just came out this week. Alan, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Hope to talk to you guys again.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That's Alan Lichtman again. The Case for Impeachment is the name of the book. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
I'm not going to sing this week because I got criticized last week for singing.
Who criticized you?
Dean.
He did? It's not
Dean,
like him.
Dean.
I don't understand.
Oh, no, I love your singing.
Dean has your album.
All of them.
Yeah. He plays it at his treehouse.
I wonder what my album's called.
Everyone knows it's Wendy.
Everyone knows it's Wendy.
It's my favorite album
bom,
of all
time. Bom, 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 bom.
Hey, Dean, this is serious. There might be a big writer's strike, right?
What?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. If that happens.
No more writing.
Who knows? People are going to be forbidden from picking up pencils and pens.
Yep.
Of all kinds. This is for television and movie writers. And the talks are stalled, not moving anywhere. And if that happens, life as we know it could be over.
It's over.
Really. I mean, TV dramas, comedies.
Yeah.
Will all stop. This is sort of the way reality television got its biggest kick in the pants and got started.
Yeah.
What was it, like 10 years ago, something like that, when the writers last went on strike?
Yeah. And do you remember, Dean, the last time this happened, they would rush projects. They knew a writer's strike was impending, and then they rushed all kinds of projects to get them done quick. Is that going on now?
Not publicly. I mean, nobody's saying that publicly, but I would be shocked if that wasn't going on right now, you know, if they weren't encouraging people to... to try to get projects done because, this was, as far as the TV and movie business, this was kind of crippling last time that this happened.
And it was 10 years ago?
About 10 years ago.
I think it was, yeah. I mean, this is when, they needed to, they were running, reruns like crazy, number one.
Mm-hmm.
But
finally, I could catch up on my Andy Griffith show.
Good time to,
right.
Good time to see what finally happened to Otis the Town Drunk. Yeah,
you know who else it affects a lot is the late night TV shows.
Oh,
Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, all those shows are affected.
Right.
And I remember last time, like the stars of the shows would try to write for them just themselves. You know, like if you were Jay Leno, you go, all right, the writers are on strike. I just got to write the show myself. Letterman, they tried doing that. It's not easy.
Yeah, you realize the value of having a team of writers when you try to do it yourself and it falls completely flat.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going to happen. And they were negotiating the Writers Guild of America, representing the writers, was meeting with the studios, et cetera, and everything is at a halt right now, which is not a good sign.
If there is a strike, it would take place pretty soon, right? In a week or so?
That's what they were saying, that it would be around the beginning of May.
Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on it and see what happens. See, this is why you never see a radio going on strike.
No.
You don't see that happening.
Our writers have gone on strike. You can tell if you listen to our show.
Right. That was in 1967.
Right.
Yes. So that's why Wendy and I, we just read Dixie Rule Cups through the whole show. That's all we do.
You know, that's not far off.
No, I know.
You know, I think the radio people did go on strike at sometime in like around 1967 or so.
Oh, did they?
I remember as a kid taking the train downtown so I could go see my favorite DJs who were picketing in front of their respective radio stations back in the day. I believe I caught a Ron Riley and Art Roberts, the big DJs of the day. A Dex Card.
Oh, was he out there too?
I think so.
All the big names.
I think so. And I have a little, I still have this. I'm nowhere near the hoarder status of a Bill Leff.
No.
With memorabilia, but I do have an old transistor radio that's got the autographs from all the old DJs of the day that I got when they were on strike.
So they were picketing, but they would still take a few minutes to give, like, time and traffic and stuff, right?
They did.
All right. Personal report.
Yeah, sure.
I was trying to talk to them, hey, Mr. Roberts, I'm interested. Can you give me some advice? Yeah, it's 37 degrees here in downtown Chicago.
We're on strike. More after this.
How scary, though, because radio jobs like now, back then for sure, they were tough to come by, and to be able to stand up for what you believe in and go on strike, good for them.
I'd
be a scab in a second.
Yep,
they had office people filling in back then. It was the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, the
AFTRA,
Radio and TV Performers Union, that went out on strike.
Wow,
I think I saw Floyd Calber.
Was he out there, Floyd Calber?
I think I got Floyd Calber's autograph. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, we hope that there's no strike because we want to be entertained. It'd be awful if the writers went on strike. So let's hope it doesn't happen. Dean, you got to have a sit down with the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, correct?
Yeah, I saw the movie yesterday.
I am so jelly. I can't wait
to
see it.
That's Wendy for jealous.
No, it's an 18-year-old or a 12-year-old. Oh. That's what they say. That's what the kids say today.
Is that what they're saying?
I thought you were like a bird from England. You birds.
I'm so jelly.
Oh, you birds.
Yeah.
I can't give a full review of the movie.
Not yet.
Right now.
No.
No, the...
But to sit down with the cast, that's a pleasant afternoon, I hope.
That was very, very, very nice. I will say, if you like the first movie, I'll just say that you'll be pleased with this, but I'll have a lot more details on the movie as we get closer to the opening, which is May 5th, by the way. But, you know, Chris Pratt is...
God, I love him.
He is getting very close to my great guys in Hollywood list, close to Tom Hanks, of being, you know, arguably one of the biggest A-listers that there is, and being completely unaffected by it all. Super nice guy. When we were getting ready to start the interview, I'm waiting for him in the room where we're going to do the interview, and he's coming down the hallway, and there's three little kids who are in the hallway, and they're so excited. They're just so excited to see the guy from Jurassic Park, the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy. And he stops and talks with them, and he's goofing around and playing with them, and he's doing the, give me five. He puts his hand out, and then when they go to slap his hand, he moves his hand away.
It kills every time,
that's
by the way.
The kids love that. I do that all the time, too. But he was, like, just such a cool guy who just, you know, certainly didn't need to take time to say hello to the kids and be nice and, you know, give them a memory they'll remember all their lives. But and when you sit down to talk with them, could not be nicer. All of his castmates have nothing but great things to say about him, which is you don't always find that to be the case. Zoe Saldana, who was in Avatar, who's in this movie again, also fantastic. We talked with John Rooker from The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
Michael Rooker. Sorry, he's got a kind of a major a pretty significant role in this film. And Kurt Russell's in the movie as well. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say, because it's been pretty much everywhere, that he plays Chris Pratt's father in this movie. But there's one scene that's supposed to be a flashback to when Kurt Russell was young.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it looks very 70s. He's driving around on a convertible muscle car. And it looks like the Kurt Russell that we remember from back in the day.
Oh, wow.
Like really super young. And I asked him how they did that scene. How did that? It's got to be something electronic. And he said that his makeup guy was able to do that. That it's almost,
I need that makeup guy. Can I tell you?
I'm telling you, right? That's what I said. He took 30 years off of his face.
He de-aged him.
He de-aged him, and they did a little bit of electronic manipulating as well. But the movie is exciting and funny. A great soundtrack, great '70s '80s soundtrack to the whole thing. So, a very very pleasant experience.
You know, one of the things you mentioned that Chris Pratt has like a Tom Hanks type of a demeanor to him and a style. And here's the thing. In both of those cases, they were very unlikely leading men. When you think of Tom Hanks in the early days when he was doing Bosom Buddies, you wouldn't say to yourself, I bet at some point that guy wins two Academy Awards and he's one of the hottest actors in Hollywood. And Chris Pratt was the same with Parks and Recreation. I just saw an episode the other day from season 2 or season 3 where he's really great on the show, but you don't say to yourself, I bet in a couple of years that's one of the biggest leading men in Hollywood.
Right.
It doesn't make sense on either case, but
right.
Look what they've done.
We interviewed Chris Pratt, I'm going to say maybe 10, 12 years ago, something like that. He had a very minor role in a CW. I don't even know if it was CW or the WB at that time, but it was a TV show called Everwood.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him being a super nice guy, but I think, you know, it was extremely unremarkable.
Yeah.
Like, really nothing. His role was nothing special. Honestly, his acting was competent. It was very good, but as Bill says, it's not something where you're going to go, wow, this guy's going to be one of the most sought after actors in Hollywood someday.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird though. When I watched Bosom Buddies, I thought for sure Peter Scolari would be the one to branch out make millions.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
That's true. And especially after the Newhart show where he was hilarious.
Right.
He was actually, that's true. I forgot he did that.
Yeah, he was a standout on that as well.
The strangest thing is, Dean, a couple of years ago, I got a chance to interview Tom Hanks and I said to him, is there ever talk of a Bosom Buddies reunion? And he said, I want to do it. Peter Scolari doesn't want to do it.
Really?
You would think the exact opposite.
Really?
Yeah.
I asked Hanks. He was with Leonardo DiCaprio. Was the movie Catch Us If You Can?
Yeah, Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can, which they were together. And I told them both how excited I was to be talking to one of the stars of Bosom Buddies and one of the stars of... Was it not Facts of Life? What
the one with Alan Thicke?
The one with Alan Thicke.
Growing Pains.
Growing Pains.
Yeah.
And neither one of them found that remotely funny. that I was even bringing it up. Stone cold faces. Tom Hanks, who's usually, you know, like Mister, you could joke around and say anything you want to him.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio was there. Oh, Mister, serious actor's here with me. I better act outraged too.
But you know why that's strange is when Alan Thicke died a couple months ago. Leonardo DiCaprio came out of the woodwork to talk about what a great relationship they had, and he was like a second dad to him.
Right. Right.
Well, this was 10 years ago. He's accepted it now.
Yeah, I bet. I bet that's it, exactly. All right, we'll find out more from Dean Richards about what movies to see and which to avoid this week. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We're talking with Dean Richards, and let's talk about some new movies that you have seen, Dean.
Well, let's start off then with Norman. It's the new Richard Gere movie. It's a little. There are no huge movies that are opening this weekend, but there are a couple of little ones that are worth talking about. And Norman is one of them. It's a little indie that Richard Gere has done about a quirky New York guy who is oblivious to everything, but thinks he can accomplish anything. He's one of these guys. It's not done with malice. He's not a guy that is out to get anybody. He is a people pleaser, and it's really a character study of this man who is he's trying to get things done. He's trying to impress people. He's trying to get people to like him. And
sounds like the story of my life.
Yeah,
and is mostly failing.
Oh,
that's where we draw the line. Wah. Right there, that's where we draw the line. Dean, would you agree with this statement? Richard Gere is an often misunderstood, if not misappreciated actor, underappreciated, don't you think?
Yeah,
sometimes?
I would think so. And I think really that's the greatest value of this movie is that it, to me, reminded me of what, at the core, what a really good actor Richard Gere is, because there really is not a lot going on in this movie. It's a whole series of interesting things, really almost without a point. But I was a little bit fascinated in Richard Gere's acting and the mechanics of what he was doing. But I just got caught up. It's like, you know, if you take the train every day and you see the same quirky guy sitting across from you every day, it's a little bit fascinating.
Yeah.
Or if you go to the same diner, you know, same restaurant, you know, the regulars who are there. They're not really doing anything, but they're just quirky, interesting characters, and that's what I think Richard Gere offers us in this film. It's only in two or three theaters around the Chicago area this weekend, so it's going to be a little bit tough to find for most people. But I give it a Dean's List C+. I enjoyed it.
You know, I always liked him. I always liked Richard Gere. I think he's one of those actors that, because he's such a good-looking guy, sometimes you look past his acting ability and just notice that he's a handsome man. But then he was in a movie, and we're going back several years, with Diane Lane, called Unfaithful.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was such a great performance of a guy who just loves his wife and realizes she's having an affair and he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't handle it real well.
Right.
Spoiler alert. But, I always enjoy Richard Gere. I think he's so good.
I was just getting around to seeing that film.
Oh, sorry. He handles it great.
I realize it's been about 15 years.
Yeah.
But
He handles it really well.
I have it sitting right on top of my 8-track player.
Unfaithful.
Yeah. No,
I saw Unfaithful and I saw Unforgiven together.
Wow.
That's the 2-pack.
That's a good night out.
Yeah.
That's a cheery night out.
Yep. That was
a
fun
time. I
remember
loving that movie and leaving it so depressed.
Yes.
At the same time. But it was a great movie, and he was great, and the guy that wound up marrying Halle Berry.
Olivier Martinez.
Olivier Martinez.
Wow,
he was the other guy.
Yeah.
He was the other guy in that movie.
So my wife kept saying, Dean, imagine what that's like to cheat on Richard Gere. Like, you're not happy with that marriage. You got to go elsewhere because Richard Gere's your husband, and that's true.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
He was not exactly, a walk in the park, though, either, part of that marriage.
I know.
And that was part of the story of this movie, is every marriage has its own story.
Yep, yep.
Anywho, the Richard Gere movie, C+, it's called Norman. Do you remember this Disney nature film that came out a couple of years ago about gorillas?
A little bit.
I don't remember what it was called now. It might have been
Gorillas.
It might have been called that.
Yeah.
But Disney has...
Gorillas Just Want to Have Fun. That's what it was called.
That could be.
I saw the wheels turning, by the way, Dean. I wish you could have been looking at him.
I thought I smelled something burning. I wondered what that was.
That was my brain.
Disney has a division called Disney Nature, where they do these really cool films. The gorilla one was really super interesting, about going deep into the forest and... photographing things that had never been seen before. They've done it again now with a new film called Born in China. It's a documentary that takes you deep into the most remote places in China, and you follow monkeys and snow leopards and pandas.
Yeah.
And you see how they interact, mostly within their own species, but with each other. And it's I like movies like that.
Yeah.
I think they're super interesting. It's about an hour and a half, and beautifully photographed. Constantly saying to yourself when you see a movie like this, wonder how they shot this.
Right.
I wonder how long it took to get that shot of a spider on a log.
Yeah,
with just the right light and so forth. Beautiful, beautiful film. So the Disney nature film, Born in China, gets a Dean's List B+.
That sounds good.
And the other movie this weekend I have not seen, I'll see a little bit later on today, is called The Promise, that stars Oscar Isaac and Christian Bale.
Oh.
It's the story of the end of the Ottoman Empire, as I understand it. So it's a very political drama.
And the Ottoman Empire is the one that Dick Van Dyke always tripped over?
Yes. That's the controversy of this whole thing. I say we put the Ottoman over there. Someone's going to trip on it if you put it right by the door.
Sure.
I'm telling you, no one's going to trip on this Ottoman for at least one season of worth of shows.
I'm in. You sold it.
It's actually the slaughter of millions of Armenians.
Oh.
But also a love triangle that's also interwoven into this. I'm told that the movie is okay. I'm hearing it's not great, but it's okay. It sounds really interesting to me. I like movies like this too. Mm-hmm. So I'll have the full review on this tomorrow morning on Steve Cochran's show.
Dean, awesome. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Have a tremendous weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
See you guys soon. Bye.
That's Dean Richards. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Amy Guth has on the Wintrust Business Launch. Stay here. Bill and Wendy, WGN.